I'm Ryan Hoover, started Product Hunt and now running Weekend Fund, investing in early stage companies. I'm panicked about having kids.
Mama, what's up? Not I love our mucho. Music.
Yeah, it's what do you think? Really nice.
Oh, the intros and exits? Giancarlo did a good job.
Yeah, I did.
So you've been in Norway. Have you seen night in 2 months? You haven't seen night.
I haven't seen night. You know, it gets a little darker, and then at 2 a.m. it gets light again.
How long does it take you to get acclimated to that?
It's never a problem
Sleep's
for me.
Not your problem.
Yeah, not a problem.
Yeah.
It's a jet lag. That's another
Everything keeps
issue.
Me up. So I think I would struggle in summer in the Great White North.
Yeah, well, you just have to have blackout deals.
Yeah, I find that drinking 60 quick shots of tequila is my blackout.
That works really well.
Yeah, it's cheaper, too, than blinds.
70 or 80 if I'm a little, you know.
The sleep. I remember it.
I remember it so well.
Are you going to ask me about my summer?
Yes. Howard, you went to Italy, didn't you?
Shh. Okay, that's personal.
Okay, one more time. Howard, you went on a vacation.
That's right. And I'm back. So thanks for that personal question, Knut. And let's start with our show. So it's summer and we're taping. We're sorry. I'm being honest. We're banging these out and then going off and you
exactly.
edit. I can't do the weekly thing. Once a week is great. And we're trying to make these evergreen. And this helps me keep them evergreen. But you'll hear this in the next month. But it's summer. And the world is full of lollipops and balloons. Let me get the backdrop for you for whenever you listen. It's the summer of 2021. Guess what? America is large and there's crazy people out there spreading rumors and there's big corporations stealing from you and your neighbor's nuts. So pretty much nothing's changed.
Yeah.
The only thing that's changed is when we started this podcast, we could all agree on what we were panicked about. And now 18 months later, nobody agrees what we should panic about, which is fun.
Yeah.
So we've kept the name of the show. And today's guest, he's 11. He says he's 34, but he's Doogie Howser of, he won't even get the reference. That's how young he is. He's the Doogie Howser of startups and now venture. And Ryan Hoover, don't know him well, but I know him because he was at the center of what I call the late Web 2.0 universe. He started a company called Product Hunt. As much as one of the largest communities, if not still is the largest community for people to discover new Web 2.0 and now crypto products.
Awesome.
Yeah, so like StockTwits for products.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And companies, it was very important for companies to launch. You know, it was kind of a replacement of media. So we'll catch up on that. He had sold the company or was acquired by AngelList, who obviously is at the center of all things investing. AngelList, angel.co, which is Naval's company. So really cool exit. But he has a new CEO there at Product Hunt. So Ryan's still involved. Knows everything about community. That's our connection. I built a community. He built a community. So he's got great stories there. But more importantly, as a 12-year-old, he went and started Weekend Fund. And again, he says he's 34, but this really feels... I mean, he's the youngest 34-year-old I've ever seen. But he's investing out of his third fund already.
Amazing.
I'm an LP in this fund. He'll get me an update. I only have people on the podcast to give me live updates of my portfolio. I don't want to read it.
That's a good idea.
I kill two birds with one stone, Knut, I'm thinking. And I want to know what the hell creates a kid like this. Because, you know, I love my kids. You love your kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I want my kids to be more like Ryan. So what I want to know what's in the water up there in Oregon, probably mosquitoes and Raid. let's see what there's anything that his parents did extra special. Cause if you are raising a millennial kid, you want him to be Ryan. So let's get Ryan on the phone.
Hello. How's it going?
Ryan Hoover.
Hello. How are you, Howard?
I'm a little worried about you. Listen.
Uh-oh.
You should be panicked about kids. It's an awful, awful, awful nightmare of a 20-year, never-ending ups and downs. So don't be worried about it.
I hear it's natural. to be afraid.
Not for me. It wasn't so natural. We had lots of coaching and doctors convincing the other party that it would be safe for my genes to spread. But for you, I think we need more Hoovers out there. So you shouldn't be panicked about having kids.
All right. I'll take it to heart.
And your priorities are in the right place. It's a great answer. That's what people should be panicked about, family.
Yeah. Susie is going to hate that I mentioned that. But
we'll just tell Susie, we'll just give her a bad URL. She's not going to find this.
Give her a different stream, edit all this out, and I'll send it to her.
Exactly. No, it's a good panic. You're thinking about it, and that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to just bing, bang, boom, have a kid and do buy now, pay later, all that stuff that you're supposed to do. You're supposed to actually panic about it so that you appreciate it when it happens. But good that you're panicked about that, not the markets. You are 34 years old. I find that hard to believe. Why don't you update your picture on the internet?
Yeah, so I wrote a blog post. I used to write a lot on the internet. I found it fun. I had a lot more time back then. And I wrote a blog post of how I never changed my profile picture. And the photo that you'll see on Twitter and elsewhere is from, I think I was 22. So you can do the math. I'm now 34. I look similar, but you know, I got some wrinkles. I look a little different. I have longer hair now, which you've seen, I think, more recently, Howard.
Yeah. Jealous.
I'm not sure if you're in approval of the long hair or not, but
I
got it.
I think if you can do it, it's like me manscaping. If you can do it, you just do it. I like shaving everything down, makes everything on me look bigger. So you're the
more aerodynamic too.
I'm just grossed out by everything about me. So the less of me, the better, including follicles. You are a good-looking, strapping young man, so it doesn't matter what you do. You can get away. You can get away with a man bun. You can get away with a ponytail. You're Ryan Hoover.
Yeah, at some point, I think I just stopped caring about what I look like, and maybe I'm approaching that point. So,
well, I can tell you, I'm 55, and I've never cared more. Even though I act like I've never cared, I just feel like I shouldn't gross people out. So, most of what my grooming is to not repulse people. No, I'm not looking to get better. I'm really just not trying to wreck people's day with my looks. And I feel
responsibility. You're a child inside. And I mean that in the most endearing way possible. Like you know, age is but a number. Age is a state of mind, right?
That's what they say. That's a lie in that it is a state of mind, but half of your day is still spent. Oh, I just moved too quickly. Like, right, Canute? Half my day is like, I'm making noises, even though my mind is like I'm a 12-year-old. My body's 55.
Not at all. I agree with Ryan completely.
Really?
It's a state of mind.
No, but I took my back out washing my hair. I cut my toe dropping my manscape on it. Like, these are problems that 12-year-olds don't have. So it is a state of mind, but then your body reminds you that it's still attached to your mind. So I agree with you 100%. Everybody should act young, but your body will remind you, unfortunately, unless you're taking these pills that some of these people take. But that's for another podcast with probably Tim Ferriss, if I ever brought him on. And maybe even Naval, who's doing that. So you are holed up where today?
So I'm in Miami right now.
And are you liking it? What's the summer like there?
So we've been here a couple months, so we're still getting to know Miami. Apparently, like, now is the worst time to be in Miami. You know, we have some random thunderstorms and things like that, but it's nice. You know, I'm just slapping the computer anyway. Like, I just work all day. So, you know, the weather doesn't affect me all too much. And, there's good energy over here though. I will admit, like, there's a lot of hype, of course, about Miami, but there is some energy. A lot of my friends moved over here and it's not a bad place to be.
Now, the energy, and I tried to soak it up a little bit. It's just big and a lot of high rises. So I didn't mm-hmm. feel the energy. I got to be honest. I like Design District. I like South Beach a little bit, but I felt it's still the energy of Flora. Flora's its own unique thing, a majiggy. And I could live there. No way Alan was going to do it. So, but I liked it. I like the weirdness and the weather.
Yeah.
Don't love the bugs, but I didn't experience the bugs. Have you experienced the bugs or like the crazy insects?
No, not at all. Actually, I haven't seen an alligator once. When we went here, I was like, wait, there are alligators like around us. And I was like, that doesn't sound safe. But I haven't seen any alligators.
That's still safer than San Francisco.
Well, yeah, I used to live in the Tenderloin. For those that know Tenderloin, I got out of there safe, no scratches. But I was there for 4 years around the time when I was building Product Hunt. And But yeah, I don't know. Miami, the thing about Miami, so I was in LA for 2 years, San Francisco, 10 years, LA, 2 years. Now we're in Miami. And I love LA, but LA is so big. It's so big that it doesn't really
have... LA is a country.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't have a tech ecosystem like any other city because it's so big. You don't have serendipity. It's really hard to meet up. It's a commitment to drive from Hollywood to Venice. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where Miami has a little bit stronger chance, I think, of creating that serendipity, is it's much smaller. You know, most of my friends are about 10-minute drive away.
But you could not have built Product Hunt but for the Tenderloin and where you were at the right time at the right place. Product Hunt doesn't happen in Miami.
You know, I think you're right. And Product Hunt started in late 2013 is when the project started. And, you know, a lot of my network is and therefore early community was built through being in San Francisco. So I think you're right. I think that's a little bit different today. If I was to build Product Hunt today as, you know, how old was I? 26 or 27 when it started. Mm-hmm. I think I could be anywhere. I think it's a little bit different today, but yeah, you're right. San Francisco is an amazing place despite what people say today.
And what's great about tech is it waits for no one. Like San Francisco blew it for the moment in time. Like technology just goes. You can't contain it. And if people don't do things right, people will, you know, the technology is now all over. Mm-hmm. And so you can't contain it and put it in some box and say San Francisco, Silicon Valley is where it's at. Now I hit the point, I guess, just scale-wise and cloud and all these things made it like, hey, you guys thought you had a Sand Hill Road you could fire a cannon off when that was the place you had to go kiss the ring not too long ago. And now the rings are everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You've bounced around for many years in different cities. Are you finding are you traveling less now because everyone is distributed and doing like video calls or are you still kind of the same old?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think about two things as 55-year-old is that I travel too much, but that is also my superpower. One of the superpowers, which is I showed up. And I don't know if what this does to a generation of people that showing up on a Zoom without grooming is not showing up. They were showing up where you used to have to wear a suit and you had to have Four Seasons and you had to think about that. Then they were showing up in the Lulu generation, which is you show up in person and you're casual. And now there's like, fuck it. I may not even put my face on this Zoom. I may just use my voice. So, you know, these are massive.
I don't even have to shower.
Like, you don't even have to shower. So there's massive changes.
I can go days without showering. No one knows.
We went from suit and tie to Lulu to naked. And and the acceleration of money throughout that, you would think like there was this rule, like you got to show up in a suit and well-groomed to raise money. And now you don't even have to show your face and you can raise money. And the acceleration continues.
There's a startup, actually. I think it's called Oasis, if I'm not mistaken, where you can actually, you could be naked, you could be shirtless, and it'll imprint clothes on top of your body on Zoom. Oh,
genius. So your brain has seen it all. Like the amount of stuff, you know, stock twits for me is just tickers coming at me. You know, I think of everything in tickers. Product Hunt was more people and products. So we kind of built the same thing around different verticals. Mm-hmm. I think Product Hunt is much bigger user-wise than stock twits. First, let's go back in time. To create a Ryan Hoover, how many siblings? What were your parents like? What was it like? Because I look at you, I don't want to know the bad stuff. Everybody could dig up bad stuff. But I look at you as a perfect kid, a millennial kid, doing good work, happy with their life, using the freedom that America has to live where they want, using the technology, thinking about the right things, you know, staying out of trouble. You know, stirring it up, but staying out of trouble. So what was the childhood like? What were your parents like? Do you talk to them?
Yeah. Yeah. So... sometimes I wish I would have gotten in more trouble when I was a kid when I could afford it. But
no,
yeah, so
I've heard people say that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's sometimes you have it was always that feeling of like, what if, you know? But yeah, I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, middle class family. My parents are entrepreneurs and they actually work together, have since I was born. And they have a really good team dynamic. My mom is sort of, how would I describe her? Like back office accounting, like operations, like make sure that like the ship's moving. My dad is more of a problem solver salesperson. And so they both have been building together and starting companies that were all normal companies, like not tech enabled, not VC packed, like normal mom and pop, small, medium business kind of businesses. And, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up, my dad and mom owned a video game store, which was like the best the best thing in the world is this, you know, a
cool parent,
like 9-year-old. Yeah. Pretty cool. And what I learned a lot from them, and especially through my dad, is a lot of the way I see the world is through like an entrepreneurial lens, in that I just can't help but thinking about like either business opportunities or problems that could be solved through capitalism, entrepreneurship, whatever you want to call it. And, he and I would often talk about like, you know, he had this saying of like, find a need and fill it. And fundamentally, like that's what kind of businesses are. It's like, find a need that people are willing to like pay for, essentially. And so I learned a lot through them. They gave me opportunities to like work in the video game store as like a 14-year-old kid.
Did you like games?
Yeah, I loved games. Yeah. Yeah. Even working at the store was super fun. I think he paid me like $4 an hour as a 14-year-old. So like technically illegal, but like awesome experience as like a 14-year-old talking to customers. And I would, you know, to this day, Windex reminds me of wiping down the counters, the glass counters that showed video games. It's weird. It's very nostalgic for me, but yeah, he encouraged me to build my own things. I bought and sold on eBay. I did some like gray hat stuff, like bonding Xboxes when I was in like high school, and build a website when I was a kid in high school as well. And like, just did a lot of like small little projects, nothing like huge, but enough to scratch that like entrepreneurial itch. And what I really realized that to this day, I hold very like close to like, I guess the way my view of the world is, I really hate getting paid by the hour. I hate hourly wage jobs, not because of the function of doing the job, but it's like the incentive is totally misaligned.
Oh my,
it's like,
God. Can you imagine? Kids were lawyers, I'd be the worst parent ever. Like, there's no happy 50-year-old lawyers.
Yeah. Well, it's just a misalignment too. And like, I could do the best job or the worst job and I get paid the same amount. I would much rather get paid based on my impact or output. And so thankfully I'm more in that position where I'm like certainly not in a 9-to-5 anymore, and have a lot of autonomy and flexibility. But, you know, as a kid, that's how I felt. And I did have hourly jobs, like a call center, in college, and I worked at a pool, like a pool store. But yeah, thank God. I hope I don't have to go back to anything like that again.
Where did you go to college?
I actually went to University of Oregon. So I stayed in Eugene after high school and went to school there.
And so when was the big bang for you? When did you say, I'm ready to go start my own company? And why Product Hunt? And what was your thinking?
Yeah, I never really decided that. I mean, what I mean by that is like, I didn't all of a sudden wake up one day and be like, I need to start a company and here's my idea and I'm going to go raise money and do the whole thing. And what I've been doing, so to give you some context, the short version is I graduated from U of O. I ended up getting an internship at a video game company in Eugene, Oregon, which is crazy because like there are none in Eugene. Learned a bunch there, then moved to San Francisco to join an early startup called Playhaven in the mobile gaming industry. This was 2010. So just as like mobile gaming was exploding.
Sure, Zynga was public right around then.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It was super cool time. And I learned a lot, joined as, I think I was like hire number 6 and did product there for 3.5 years. And during that time, I built a good network and relationships with people in San Francisco and VC and other founders, and started writing a lot and blogging. And anyway, I was basically just kind of following my curiosities. Like I loved writing about companies. I would write about like how I thought Snapchat was, like why it was interesting from a product design perspective, or what I thought was interesting about the nuances of like Tinder, like even the small things, like they have these cards that you can like peep, like when you're swiping, you see the cards that are behind there, which is like a subtle cue to the user to like swipe more to reveal the next card. So like, anyway, I would use writing as a vehicle to like express myself and like learn. Mm-hmm. And so I was playing with all these products. I was really curious about discovering products and then started Product Hunt as a side project. Not even like, frankly, there wasn't much thought into it. It's just like, I think this could be cool to like aggregate the products that are launched every day. And I have a few friends that I think might like this. So, you know, let me see if people like this too.
And when did you realize it was more than that?
So that was, it started off as a newsletter. Right. Ironically, it's similar to like how AngelList started to some extent. And, you know, that was obviously very basic, but it gave me enough confidence that people were responding positively. I got more subscribers just organically. And then I realized, okay, well, people seem to like this content, but it'd be way cooler if there was a website where people could come together and interact and comment and they could post themselves, not just like me curating to an extent. And so this was early 2014, turned the newsletter, expanded it into like a simple web app with my friend, Nathan Bashaw. And for about 4 months, roughly. We just worked on it on the side. So there was no company, but yet it was growing very quickly. I think we sort of filled this hole in the market where there really wasn't outside capital.
It was just your own.
Yeah. I paid like the Heroku server bill for like, I don't know, it was maybe $500 a month or something. And a couple other expenses. We ended up doing some advertising just to pay server costs. Mm-hmm. I think it was Ryan Delk from at the time was at Gumroad.
Yeah.
He Venmo'd me the first $5,000 that we made at Product Hunt.
That's cool. And now he has a fund.
Yeah. It was not funded and until we ended up ultimately decided to raise capital and build a team and everything.
And was it easy? I remember Andreessen Invest, but was raising capital easy because of you had an interesting story. You obviously have great style and you understood product. Was raising money surprisingly easy or hard?
Yeah, back then it was very, very easy. Part of the reason, frankly, is the market was good. It wasn't as hot as it is now. Valuations were much lower, but it was similarly great time to raise money as a founder. But the other dynamic was we were building for the tech community. So like that's a huge advantage when it comes to raising. Like you're already capturing the attention of investors Correct. And people in tech. So, you know, months before we even decided to raise, we got lots of interest, a lot of VCs like courting me and saying, hey, you want to catch up for coffee and love what you're doing, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a couple of months at least, I was very cautious. I was like, I know that raising money has a few things. Like one, it's not like you can just give it back if you like change your mind. Mm-hmm. Two, when you raise VC capital specifically, it means that you got to go big. You know, you're not looking for like a $10 million exit. You need to build a big company. And so I was very cautious and delayed that decision for many weeks until I had conviction that this is what I wanted to do. And also this is like such a basic thing, but I think it's worth calling out maybe to some people listening is the big question too is like, what are you going to use the money for? What do you need it for? Because I think a lot of people today get infatuated with like the process of fundraising without even thinking about like, well, what do I need it for? For me, it was, I needed to hire a team. Like just simple as that. Like I didn't have money to build a team. And so that's what I raised money for ultimately.
So Product Hunt's still around today. Give me some metrics on who's the user and why people should go there.
Yeah. So it's been almost seven and a half years since Product Hunt launched and started. I stepped down as CEO in October last year. And so now Josh Buckley is taking over. Team has grown like 50% this year in the past like 6 months or so. And they just announced some new projects. But yeah, to date, I should know these updated numbers, but I've sort of lost track on some of it. We've had probably over 200,000 like products launch, maybe 250,000 products or companies launch on Product Hunt over the years. And it's come from founders, makers. It's a combination of startups, like VC-backed companies, to teenagers launching their first app, like their Chrome extension or website for the first time. So I think one thing that I really want to support and part of my like motivation for Product Hunt is it's not about just VC-backed companies. It's really about encouraging people to build and giving them an opportunity to get their first users, get some self-confidence. Because if you're a 14-year-old in the middle of nowhere and you want to launch like your first app, it's like super nerve-wracking. Furthermore, like who do you launch it to? Your mom and your couple of your friends? Like who's going to see it? So I'm proud to say that like we have this global community of people of all different types launching and, you know, at least getting their first 100, maybe 1,000, tens of thousands of users.
Yeah, and it's impossible. You would get this more than most. I can't talk about this with many people. It's impossible to productize community. Like, I remember used to, like, everybody's playing the game. Ooh, can I get, you know, I'm backdooring you to say, hey, we got to, you know, it's like, it's almost like you're half media, half technology. You want to be all technology, but unfortunately, if you're building community, it's media as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, there's...
It takes the fun out of it. You can't productize community. It's fun to build community, but it's relentlessly exhausting. No one lasts. Like, you're 7.5 years. Like, you're a great entrepreneur, but, like, community wears people. It's like 7.5 years is like 70 years in community building.
Yeah, I think it's really... That's a really good point. So there's certain people in the company at Product Hunt that are... like, Rado's been with us for over 6 years, I think. Julie around 6 years.
That guy needs a break, even if he doesn't know it. He needs a year off.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of Jake's head of support. I think he's 5+ years at the company. We have a lot of people who've been around for a while. Then we also have some people, particularly in community roles more than anything else, who have gotten burned out.
And yeah.
Part of it's to your point. It's like community is partly a support role. Like they're in the sense that you're just fielding issues that come up, and every morning there's something, you know, that might come up. It's draining. It's really tough.
So when was the first instinct to switch hats and become an investor? What was the moment?
So funny enough, I thought about getting into venture in 2013 before Product Hunt started, before I even had the idea for PH. And at the time, it was actually very different. If you wanted to break into venture, your best bet, your really only choice was maybe joining as an associate if you're someone at like 25, 26, 27. With a little bit of like operational experience. And I'm an introvert. And so I sort of hesitated, and I was like, well, I am interested in venture. Like I love the idea of talking to founders, discovering new companies. I don't know if I want to be an associate at a firm and then like just do a bunch of coffee meetings. So I ultimately didn't pursue it then. And I figured, okay, I'll join a company. It was actually my primary goal. And then eventually Product Hunt started instead. But fast forward, after Product Hunt was sold to AngelList, I remained at the company for about 4 years, still a CEO, but it was around 2017 is when AngelList launched venture funds. And for those that don't know, AngelList historically had been doing primarily like syndicates or SPVs. Mm-hmm. So kind of like deal by deal investments. Mm-hmm. And venture funds was their first foray into like an all-in-one kind of fund management platform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a walk and talk because that's how Naval likes to take his meetings around the Embarcadero. And he's like, hey, I was telling him, hey, I'd love advice. Like, I'd love to start investing. And, you know, what would you advise? Like, I could scout for a fund. I could do a little bit of angel investing, but I don't have a lot of money. And he's like, hey, why don't you start a fund? And to be honest, at the time, again, 2017, I was like, not many people are starting funds. Like, it felt like a daunting thing. Like, to start a fund was like a big deal. And I felt like it wasn't something that I would be able to do or earn the right to do. But, you know, I was like, all right, well, I'll raise $1 million fund. I think I can maybe convince people to give me $1 million to start a fund. And that'll be like, you know, my first foray into investing. So anyway, the first fund we raised $3 million. So still tiny, but a little bit bigger than $1 million. And yeah, the motivation was twofold. It was one, I'm already doing a lot of similar activities with Product Hunt, like finding companies, building relationships with founders. And two, I wanted to see if I was good at investing. I wanted to like start as soon as possible and just start building that experience and muscle.
Yeah. And so was that the early part of what Rolling Funds is today? You were the first one to really kind of, you were like project zero of Rolling Funds? Because I've been on those walk and talks with Naval back in 2010-11 when he was starting AngelList.
Yeah.
I used to just dump ideas on him. And here we are 11 years later. And a lot of my ideas just happened because they were natural. And I don't think I would have thought Rolling Funds would have been the thing that's the thing, but it's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So at the time, 2017, there were just, I guess they call them traditional funds. So like your standard fund where you get a bunch of LPs to commit over a certain period of time and you deploy that fund, then you raise another fund. And what was interesting actually is back then it was Rolling Funds, as far as I know, was never part of the conversation or strategy at AngelList. I don't know if there was foresight into like building that sort of product, but there was this known problem of the biggest challenge with most emerging managers is it's kind of twofold. It's one, raising money from LPs.
Still the biggest challenge, even with Rolling Funds.
Yeah, true. Absolutely. And the other that's related though to that is, this actually goes back to my experience, is like, if you're an emerging manager, it's really hard to predict how much money you can raise. So for me, I was like, all right, I want to raise 1 million, ended up raising 3 million. And having that flexibility with a rolling fund is really helpful, where you don't really have to actually define, you know, exactly your fund size. You can test the market. You can see how much people are willing to back you and then kind of evolve from there.
Yeah, where the social leverage is a case of all these problems. You know, I was working, still CEO. I felt like, what a better time to be an investor than while you're seeing flow. Like the best time for Ryan to be an investor is while he's CEO of Product Hunt, because that's when he has maximum network and flow. Yeah, it's busy, but at the same time, that's when you want to back people, when they're busy, especially around investing. So we we didn't have rolling funds or all this stuff. So I thought we could raise 10 million. We ended up only raising six, and not raising that four and then not able to be planning correctly pushed us down a route where we couldn't take all our pro rata in Robinhood. So there's nothing more expensive than that misalignment. And it is. That's just life. Technology moves along. Now you have rolling funds, and even rolling funds are imperfect, in my opinion. Not, I mean, I think that the GPs love it. As an LP, I don't necessarily love it. It just, I can't plan as well. Everybody's different. But I think we, from your walk in 2017 and talk with Naval, I mean, the last 4 years, you guys are at the center of this acceleration of it all with that one walk. I mean, it was something in everybody's heads, but that's when that really started getting formalized. Because I remember Weekend Fund. That was like the first little fund, get it done on AngelList. There was a buzz about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I knew. I forget how many funds were starting off in the beginning. But yeah, compared to what we see today, it was much smaller.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the thing. Like, I have the luxury of talking to so many people in this space, and it's just like the amount of young kids, and it's, and they should be investors. Like, this has been what I've been, my whole life's work is like, this is a form, this is the butcher of, you know, instead of cows and meat and goats, it's capital. And so we need more butchers because there's all this capital. And why should allocation be a pension fund? Like, right? Like, it's all, there's just so many inefficiencies in the system. So Naval can just continue. There's so many companies that continue and innovate on this because there's a misalignment of capital. The gatekeepers and the people that should be stewards of capital that are finally going to get a chance to be stewards of capital. And there'll be a lot of bad fund managers, but there's a lot of bad butchers.
Yeah. And that's fine. Like in the world of startups and tech, people look at, oh, you know, most of these companies, like they burn all this money and they fail and they don't succeed. And you're like, well, you know, the way I see it is the winners, the ones that essentially finance the attempts. And we need people to attempt things. We need a system that can support that. And you know, I think it's a good thing to have more capital and more earnest founders. I think it's important to like emphasize the earnest part, but earnest founders.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating moment because you're not a stock guy or a macro guy. And I think the difference between young kids today and investors of my generation is we were like, okay, top down. What's the dollar doing? What's interest rates doing? What's the economy doing? What's happening in there? You know what I mean? Weird data. And kids today are like, what's my network say?
Yeah.
What's the temperature of my network?
We're NFTs in your rainbow wallet. Yeah, right.
Like, don't even start. Okay, don't go that young.
Okay, fine.
I am 55. There is a limit to how fast I can go. But and we'll end on that cool stuff in the end. But that's what fascinated me is watching guys your age discover what I discovered with stocks and waiting a week to get my charts. You guys are seeing in real time times a billion, and not enough people are doing the Ryan Hoover thing, and not enough parents understand that our kids are just going to be, whether they like it or not, with the government printing money, and the next generation is going to be about investing that money. Because if they don't, it just sits there in a bank account going to waste. And that's the inevitability of crypto, where every nickel is accounted for and can be lent and spent and multiplied, and there's no loose change in between the sheets. And so does any of that stuff interest you? I know we've talked about, but does any of that, or are you just like, show me the product? I don't care what the economy's like. I don't care what the market's doing. Good product, good team. Don't care about anything else.
So I'm definitely not a public stock. I think I told you last time we chatted, I've never bought a public stock like individually. And maybe I should, but it's just not the game I have played, and I just don't have interest in it either personally. So I don't really follow like the macro markets, and instead I the way I see it is I kind of try to play where I have an edge or some competitive advantage. And so for me, I feel like that's more private companies, early stage, more specifically, technology companies. And so yeah, definitely focusing more on that. In the world of crypto though, I'm not an NFT day trader, token day trader, because also I don't feel like I have like the edge, or I haven't invested the time to be one of those people. However, we are investing in like crypto companies that are primarily building things for like actual utility. So we're investing more in the company, less so like token projects per se, although sometimes they raise through their token. But yeah, we're really interested in companies that are building for whether it's DAOs or social tokens or things that help communities organize and create better alignment around their incentives. Because I think ultimately that's where the internet's going. Like if Product Hunt was built today from scratch, it would be crypto native for sure.
Wouldn't it? You'd be killing it because you would have a token and it would be a token for the product economy. It'd be pretty cool. Like you can't cry about spilt milk. I was talking about the guy who had Shopify before Shopify, Magento. It's like, hey, the cloud changed things. Can't put it back. And now crypto changes things. And every day that I wake up, I'm like, we're closer and closer to the Netscape moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
upon wild. Us.
It's upon us. It's exciting. It also is like this FOMO driver where you're like, I don't know enough, or I'm not on top of this enough, or, oh, I don't know about that company, or there's so many things happening so quickly. It's hard not to have that FOMO kind of feeling.
Isn't that fascinating? Because it was like, it plays out at the speed of the internet. 17 in crypto was 1999 in internet. And now we're having, everything's compressed because it's global and it's in the cloud and it's real time. Mm-hmm. So nothing's delayed. So what was, you know, NASDAQ took 17 years to get back to all-time highs. And what did it take crypto? 2 years, right? Yeah. And I relate everything to Amazon. Like Bitcoin is kind of, and Ethereum are kind of like Amazon. They're like the things that survive that no one can still explain. When Amazon broke back to all-time highs, it wasn't about AWS and it wasn't about, everybody thought it was the Kindle and how are they making money, but it was really about the cloud. And I don't think everybody's figured out, but all the crypto bubble and crashes is a condensed version of the NASDAQ bubble. So I think the FOMO, what I tell people like you is, damn, FOMO is a waste of time. The kids is a good panic. The FOMO is, it's unimportant. We're just beginning. It's the beginning of the beginning. So there's just going to be so many cool things now built despite themselves. And like I tell other people, Goldman Sachs is doing quite well, even in the crypto universe, so is Wells Fargo. So there's something for everybody. And so how do you decide? What's your filter for, is it mostly referred in, or are you finding deals and calling the founders?
It's a combination. I mean, most of the deals that we've invested in are usually through co-investors or people in our network or things like that. But we've done a bunch of deals that from cold emails. We've done from some deals, of course, from like proactive outreach, like maybe something we've seen on Product Hunt where like, oh, that's interesting. Reach out, meet the founder. And so it's a combination. I think we're investing pretty broad. So like I have a lot of emerging managers or people who want to start funds reach out and say, hey, Ryan, love to get your advice. Like how do you raise a fund? What advice do you have on strategy? Funny enough, like my general advice is like be an expert in something and like go super deep into it and like focus on that.
I still agree with that. I'm not a generalist. I think there's generalists out there, but I don't like giving my money to generalists because in the stock market, same thing. I just felt it was a way to underperform. So I agree with you there.
Yeah. Although I don't take my own advice in that.
Nobody does. That's life.
Yeah. My dad told me, like, do as I say, not as I do. Kind of half joking.
And he did that as he was doing something stupid. He told you that.
Probably. So yeah, we're more generalists. We invest across consumer, B2B. Like, we avoid maybe hard tech and most hardware and things that have no business evaluating. But we are pretty generalist because I guess the reality is we just get introduced to so many interesting things across so many different emerging spaces that we don't want to narrow ourselves too much. And so far, it's worked well.
Yeah, it's worked great. What's the number one thing you've learned about being an investor?
Ooh.
Because now you're an old guy, you get on a phone, like you know what to screen for right away. Like what is the one thing that you know?
To be honest, it might be a cop-out answer, but it in some ways, I know that there's no formula necessarily for investing in early stage companies. And what I mean by that is like, yeah, you can have these check boxes that you want to check and these things that you're looking for, but you know, we've passed on certain deals where it didn't hit those check boxes and I had pretty high confidence it wasn't the right thing to invest in. Then, you know, a year or two later, they're now a $1 billion company.
Right answer though. That's what makes seed investing so great. There are no rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only rule is, you know, Fred gave me the one rule and I don't even follow that rule all the time, which is like, if you love everything about it at a seed stage level, except the price, do the deal. Because that's generally what it comes down to. If you love everything about it and the guy yells the price and you go, whoa. Sticker shock.
Yeah.
Versus FOMOing into a deal that everybody's in and not caring about the price. Every time I see consensus at seed stage, it's not a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tough too, because I think there's an element of a, you know, where there's smoke, there might be fire feeling where, you know, if everybody is talking about this particular company, like you should probably check it out, but you also don't want to necessarily chase the herd.
Correct. Because where there's fire, there's sometimes a lot of tragedy.
Yeah.
You know, you could spin it all ways. I think you're doing it right. What gets you excited today?
Yeah. The thing that we're, I hate to be a little vague, but I'll speak to the what we're exploring right now inside of Weekend Fund. So what I love more than anything is building, frankly, like creating. Even when I was a kid, like creating a free fort was like super fun. Just like the act of like building something that's functional and something that people can use. And so at Weekend Fund, we're exploring some things and building, we'll be building some things around basically building community around the fund itself, which everyone uses the word community mostly wrongly and don't understand what it means. But for us, effectively, what that means is like, how do we leverage the 350 plus LPs that we have in our fund that are all excited to support early stage companies? How do we activate them and build a system where they can support and directly help companies without us always
correct.
Being that
needy? Because the first person I sent to you, because I think if you, if it's not me, it's you. If I was going to refer somebody to anybody, I refer them to you. And you came up with this idea of taking whack job 24. I don't know. What was the idea? What was your idea? Because you now have my wife as an LP. God bless you.
Yeah.
And I'm telling her to hire an activist and come after you hard. But that's, you know, that was one of the risks of taking her money and not doing due diligence.
I know. I'll regret this.
Kadeen shaking his head going, oh, my God. And then I've referred Ryan like 10 first-time fund investors, and a bunch of them wrote checks. So I think it's genius. I think it's also going to be hell. But if there's anybody that can manage community hell, it's you. You live community. So what is it about that idea that stuck in your head, and how do you manage that?
Yeah. I mean, so our belief generally is like founders essentially, they have limited number of equity. They have 100 percentage points of equity to give out in their company. And each percentage point they give out hopefully buys them like high ROI. And so what we ultimately believe is like founders will benefit from having as many people around the table that are financially invested in their success as possible, who are capable and excited to support and help. And so our belief is like, okay, if we can aggregate a bunch of those people, a bunch of operators and founders, by the way, I think it was somewhere between 40 or 50% of people who invested in our fund through the community raise had never invested in a fund before.
Yeah. My some wife. Of them,
yeah. There you go. Your wife being one.
And my daughter tried to, but there's still some screw ups and it's not your fault. It's just the laws.
Yeah. The accreditation laws.
Fact is my daughter's more accredited than 90% of the accredited investors. And she was so excited to be in your fund and couldn't. Not your fault.
Yeah.
But that's how far we still have to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? My daughter is accredited in every level of the world. She's ready to go. And the law says slow down.
Yeah. And that's something I think we'll see some changes. We've already seen some loosening of like the number of LPs you can have in correct. Based on certain criteria. And but yeah, I mean, our goal is like, let's get a bunch of people who are excited to write, frankly, small checks into the fund. Some of them are $2,000, like not big checks. But they're really doing it because they want to be associated with Weekend Fund. They want to support founders and they want to get involved. And for about half of them, this is their like first fund investment. So, you know, maybe the next fund, Weekend Fund 4, maybe the laws will change. Maybe we'll even do an equity crowd fund, which comes with its own restrictions and everything. But, you know, there are ways that we could bring in thousands of LPs theoretically. And if we can build the community system correctly to scale to potentially thousands of LPs who are all helping the founders, then, I mean, I can just like take a break. We can just invest and like have them do all the work. Just kidding. But like half kidding, like
half
ultimately
kidding,
these people should be way more helpful than I am or Vetica is who works with me on the fund alone.
If investing at the seed stages is an art and deploy money to more potential artists and artisans. And so I think that's why I keep investing with you, is like you understand how this is, because there is no rules, but there is a general sense of community and understanding ego is not part of it. It's not one, you're right and the other person's wrong. 1,000 people can be right.
Yeah.
And that's the cool part. We're in the pie expanding business, not in the split up the pie business. And so, I mean, the work's great. I got to have you back on the podcast, but we didn't talk about the most exciting thing. Did we talk about the most exciting kind of project that you're looking at?
If you're referring to like company or stage,
Well, it's all seed stage. So what's something that you've written a check about is like fucking blows my mind?
Yeah. I'll talk about Deal. You're familiar with Deal.
I'm an investor in it through you. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, Deal is basically like, you know, the X for Y is like Gusto for remote workers is kind of how they started. And, you know,
Gusto just raised like $200 million today.
Oh, did they? Yeah. I missed that. Wow.
Series E. So Deal just raised a big round too, right?
Yeah, they raised a Series C at a $1.25 billion valuation.
And you were a seed investor, and it's basically Gusto for
remote workers. They started with contractors, but now they also support full-time employees. And the thesis really is like distributed and remote working, we believe, was going to be the future back in 2017, partly because product is fully distributed. And Alex, the CEO, Shuo, the co-founder as well, is like amazing. And we just believe this category is going to be a thing. And then COVID happened.
Yeah, COVID accelerates this whole thing.
Accelerate a lot of that, yeah.
And crypto, what's something cool, a wallet or something? What do you think is like the thing before the thing that you're excited to participate in?
So actually one company, it won't be maybe what you'd expect. We actually did an SPV. So we focus early stage, but occasionally we do SPVs in a little bit later
single
stage.
Single purpose
companies.
Vehicle for my one listener. So it's an entity created to invest in one thing.
Yeah, exactly. We did a $2 million SPV in Magic. And Magic is an infrastructure platform for passwordless authentication. And that doesn't sound like crypto initially. But what's brilliant about Magic is, one, from a UX perspective, it's beautiful. Two, passwords are a big issue. Like, they're breaches all the time.
I change mine every day just because I don't remember them.
So every single day, yeah.
Yeah, I spend half my day changing my password.
How many times have you hit that? Yeah, forgot password, and then you go through the process. Yeah. It's
what's crazy is half the time it's the same password, and it has to tell me, because quit it already, change your password.
Yeah, yeah.
Half my emails are from a company sending me an email to change my password that I requested. And then half my texts are a passcode to get into that email. That doesn't seem very efficient.
No, you should be using Magic.
So anyway, I looked at Magic and I didn't get it because I'm an idiot. So keep going. So the UI is great. And the idea is...
Well, yeah. What I like about Magic in part is they're one servicing a Web2 world. Like they service, you know, sites and it's useful for you know, Web2 infrastructure. But what they're really building for too is a Web3 future, where how do you authenticate in a decentralized like world where everything is fully decentralized, and how do you do it in a way that is
safe,
safe and also accessible for a mainstream audience? And so I like this bridge because crypto is one of those things that is a little bit hard to time. Like if they're only building for Web3 companies, well, there's like two of them. I mean, I joke, of course, but
well, yeah, not Goldman's at all time highs, as is Bitcoin. That's a problem and an opportunity.
Yeah. And so they're able to build for Web2, get customers, get revenues while Web3 catches up. And by the time Web3 is more the norm of the internet, they'll be in a great position. And with, I don't know, I could talk on and on about like their moat and all these cool like effects, like network effects in the future. But it's a really cool company.
And do you like crypto yourself? You said you're buying NFTs.
Yeah. I'm actually not a big I'm following NFTs, but I'm not like an NFT collector. I am following certain projects. Like right now I'm paying attention to Miami Coin. I don't know if you've been following that project.
No.
But it's the mining just started about 4 or 5 days ago. It's you know, City Coins is the project. Miami is the first coin that they're launching with. Mm-hmm. And in short, it's a coin that you purchase and
has high humidity and
high humidity, occasional thunderstorms. Yeah. But it's essentially, there's a lot of different ways to describe it, but it's almost like an opt-in like tax equity play. So when you purchase $100 of Miami Coin, 30% of that goes to a wallet that the city controls. And the city can use that to, just like they use taxes, to improve quality of life effectively. But the cooler thing is that everybody that owns Miami Coin is kind of a part of this ecosystem, and that Miami Coin is programmable. And so what you'll see over time, if this really takes off, is you'll see people building essentially decentralized apps around Miami Coin that might be, it could be things like, I'm really pitching Patrick, who's leading the project, to do like a Miami Coin like cafe, where you can actually get access to this co-working cafe space if you hold Miami Coin. You can also stake the Miami Coin, which yields stacks, which can be used to pay for the operations of like the cafe and everything else. But anyway, like there's a bunch of ideas that I think will come out of this. But I think it's really interesting idea around like a city driven token that is ultimately something that people can opt into with the goal of like bettering quality of life in that location.
This is great stuff. I'm excited to be an LP. Knowing as much as you know about investing, and let's say you came in gun to your head, because I'd rather talk to you about stock market investing and not care about the qualifications. But three companies you could buy tomorrow, valuation aside, you just love the products, love the company, and just you don't care about a 50% drawdown. So, because this is what a good financial advisor should tell you. If there's three companies that Ryan Hoover is more qualified to know about product and usage and whatever, what are the three companies that you would buy tomorrow?
Oh.
That are public companies.
Public companies.
Yeah. Irregardless of price.
And I gotta buy them at the price today?
Who cares? Because that's not what you should be worried about.
Yeah. I mean, I do love Tesla. It's an amazing car. When I moved to LA, I bought a Model 3, and it's like light years ahead of anything else that I've driven.
You don't care about the interior.
It's not the most like, creative idea.
Right. Okay, no. But okay, next
you
one.
You like interior? I think it's all right.
That's what I missed about this generation. They don't care about luxury. Their take of luxury is different than the next. No, you're right. I'm wrong. Okay, next is?
Next, public company. Man, I mean, I feel like my default is to go to all the boring ones. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Apple is amazing, yet it's also what I
think it's the most undervalued company in the world.
Really?
Why isn't it?
Is it like $2 trillion right now?
Yeah, it's undervalued in the sense that guess what came to your name right after Tesla? Like, this is why I'd rather talk to you than a money manager. Is everybody's basing it on what the world had boxed as valuations. If that meant anything, there wouldn't be crypto because there's no fundamental analysis of crypto. So if there's no fundamental analysis of an inanimate shit, why are we still trying to box up Apple and Tesla into old world metrics? This is why I would give you investing 101 to yourself is like stop non-investing in the market because you're more right than most. So far, Tesla, Apple, what would be the third one?
Third one. I'm trying to think of what I use because that's kind of how I would.
Correct.
I almost have to like Google public companies. I'm like, what companies are public? I'm like,
you
that
just
out of
answered
touch.
It. You just answered it. So Google.
Google. Yeah.
You know. So this is why you're right and everybody else is wrong. And I'm just shocked that you haven't bought them and then rooted for them to go down 30% because you would buy more. So there you go. I think you should be owning a few stocks and you just named three that I think have outperformed most investors for the last 20 years. So I wouldn't try and time the market. I would just say put a little bit of money in those three companies and hope they drop 40%.
Yeah.
That is how you invest in the stock market, by the way.
So yeah.
I won't charge you for that. Somehow you got a free podcast out of this and I gave you an investing lesson. This just seems,
there you go.
Something seems off. Tip the waiter.
How do I buy a stock, Howard? Just kidding.
Yeah.
I sort of know.
Okay. Well, that's insulting. Pull up Robinhood.com.
I've heard of Robinhood.
Yeah, you could buy some fractional shares.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you. I think. Listen, you're panicked about having kids. I gave you some free advice. If you have a boy, you know, Howie's not a horrible name.
Howie. Yeah. I'll consider it.
And it's great to catch up and hear the whole backstory. I think the listeners here will love it. So keep banging away, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Knut.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
So what do you think?
I love listening to these guys that are young compared to us, still grown-ups, but young with such fresh minds and such go-getting attitude.
He went from Oregon to San Francisco to Miami.
He's great.
He's just getting shit done.
Yep.
Sells his company to AngelList. Is worried about kids. Is wealthy without being in the stock market. He is the poster child for how the next generation, like, you know what I'm saying? He is living in the future and he didn't even know he is. He's just living. And that is why I get excited about investing. It's like, he's not fucking worried about the inflation rate and the unemployment rate or the vaccination rate.
Right.
He's just going to where the puck is. He's just trying to like figure out where the puck's going next. So, I mean, when you can find people like that, you just fucking put some money on. You
know? I want to invest with it.
Yeah. So, I'm saying to get Ellen and Rachel all jazzed up and a few other people. I think Nikita put some money in there. So that is the future.
Uh-huh.
He's a fascinating kid. So anyways, this is Panic with Friends. That was Ryan Hoover, Weekend Fun. founder of Product Hunt. We sit down, Knut and I, and sometimes Don and a bunch of other people, and talk to investors, founders, entrepreneurs, traders, and just try and stay one step ahead of things. And you can find us at Google, Spotify, Apple, anywhere your favorite podcast app. Search my name, Howard Lindzone, or Panic with Friends. And once a week, we're coming at you. Hit the subscribe button. You won't have to think about it. And doesn't have to be a famous name. Go back in the archives. There is a lot of great people on the show like Ryan that aren't famous, but have tremendous wisdom around investing. Have a great week. Talk to you next week. Thanks, Knut.
Howard Lindzone is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.